listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
It's supper time.
Open up wide.
We got some entrees for you today. Although we're going to break them down into smaller pieces so that you can much more. No, I was going to say the tasty treats we're breaking down into smaller pieces. I'll set you up for that one in just a second.
No, it's okay. We can keep going. I think this is funny this way.
Today we are talking about serverless and cloud functions. What are they? What are the providers, the different frameworks that you can use with them, the ups and downs? Why would you want to use serverless? Is there still a server if it's serverless? We'll get that joke out of the way immediately. There still is a server somewhere. No one knows where, but at some point there's still a server running. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. Today we're sponsored by .tech domains, which is in the name. They're .tech domain names, and FreshBooks, which is cloud accounting. We'll talk about them both partway through the episode. How are you doing today, Scott Tolensky?
Doing good. If it sounds like I'm loopy, it's because I am a little loopy. Yeah, no. Doing good, man. Courtney was in Michigan, did a little friends thing. So Landon and I had a boys weekend for the first time ever. It was the first time that it was just Landon and I hanging out at the house together for a few days. You know, just we made a giant snow pyramid that's going to be there forever and ever because it's a tall snow pyramid. And yeah, we got a ton of snow. It was a lot of fun, you know. So it was kind of an exhausting weekend, but it was a fun, exhausting weekend. Definitely one of those good ones, you know.
That's good. Yeah, we've been starting to get some serious snow now, and although it keeps melting, it's really frustrating. But every time it comes out, we try to build a snowman or a pyramid or whatever. Or the thing that we do here in Canada is we go to like the end of the street where they plow all the snow into this like 15 foot tall snowbank, and then you make these like terrifyingly scary tunnels through them. Collapse on you at any point. I remember as a kid, we would like make these tunnels through these snowbanks, and teachers would be like fine with it. And I'm thinking now, like that's like 10 feet of snow on you at any point. But that's all part of growing up in a snowy country.
Yeah. I think we were going to build a snowman, but like the snow wasn't sticking enough. So we were just like, all right, you know, this was piling into a mound, and then we, you know, make it into a nice little pyramid. So that was fun.
Yeah, we went tobogganing, and what the kids are getting now is, this is not like an old man, the kids are getting now are these like foam toboggans that have like a sheet of plastic on the bottom. It's almost like a crazy carpet that you can actually hold on to. Because you know, a crazy carpet, for our listeners that live in warm climates, a crazy carpet is...
I don't know anything about cold. I've never
heard
the word.
You don't know what a crazy carpet is?
Not outside the context of like Aladdin or something. I've never heard the term.
Google crazy carpet. Right now, it's basically a piece of like plastic that's rolled up with two little holes in it that you hold on for dear life. And those things freaking rocket down the hill. But it's really hard to like get on. So the kids now have like that, but on the top, they have this like almost like a surfboard, like a really foamy surfboard or like a sticks, boogie board or something.
Yeah.
And they go fast, man. I was so impressed. I was ripping down the hills with my kids.
Boogie, boogie, boogie.
All right. Well, let's get into it. We're going to be talking about serverless and cloud functions, like I said. So why don't we dive right on into it? You want to take a gander? What is serverless, Scott?
Yeah. Serverless is just someone else's server. Or isn't that the whole joke? Or is that the cloud? That's the cloud. The cloud is just someone else's server. I don't know. The point.
Yeah.
Point
it's
really
very, it's
sticks.
Very much the same thing.
Yeah.
The cloud and serverless are tightly bound.
Yeah, so basically the idea behind serverless is that you're really not focusing on managing your own server instance, essentially, for your application. And what you're doing is doing everything based on whatever the route or the URL that needs to access this data, whether that's a specific API route that you're hitting to go do some sort of function. Maybe it's your webhook. Maybe that's your API. Maybe that is any of your given things. Each of these access an individual function that will run and do all of its stuff and output based on whatever you need it to do. So it is a server-side instance, as in the code you're writing is a server-side language, node, whatever, but it's only like one specific, you could think of it as a specific endpoint that you're managing to do one specific thing, rather than having a whole server that's doing a whole bunch of different things and you're having to manage the entire server itself.
Yeah, so I like to think of it as sort of like URL-driven or functional, function-based programming.
Yeah,
because
just function-based, like
Just like sort of just to prep myself for this episode and also just because I've been super curious about it, I tried to convert the Syntax website, which has a very small server component. There's three functions. There's one that will convert all the episodes from Markdown into HTML. There's one or there's two endpoints that will get all of the shows. And then there's another endpoint that will get a specific show. And then there's another endpoint, which I forget who it was. Somebody who listens to the podcast wrote an endpoint that took all the sick pics out of the show notes and put them into their own page. And the regex for getting the sick pics out of there was like anywhere it says ick in an H2. grab that. And it works great. So those there's just like three or four little endpoints there. Those are three. And if for each of those, you need to create your own sort of URL. And they each are their own sort of, you can even think of it as its own server. They're not really able to talk to each other unless you, we'll talk about sharing code in just a second. And that's different than a DigitalOcean droplet or a Heroku instance or Linode. And so anywhere you go and buy like an actual server and you upload an application to it, that's different because how that works is that you buy some server space and then you run your application on it. And if your application gets really big or if you have a lot of traffic or any number of other reasons that your server is not enough, you have to upgrade the entire server. And that server will always be running no matter what goes on. Actually, that's not true with Heroku.
Yeah.
And the idea with these serverless functions is that they're not running at all until somebody initially hits that URL. And then it has to do what's called a cold start. It has to sort of boot up and then start responding to the people. And then once there's not any more requests to that function, it will spin down, meaning that it said, oh, like nobody needs me. And that's why sometimes when you go to, this is the same thing with Heroku as well, although Heroku is not serverless. Sometimes when you go to Heroku for the first time, it takes like, I don't know, an extra 300 milliseconds or so. That's because it needs to actually boot up the application. Similar to if you were to run like node index.js, that process needs to happen because you're not with serverless, you're not paying to have the server running 24/7. You're paying to have it running for the 300 milliseconds or 7 seconds or 3 minutes that you need it to run. And then you spin it down. And the benefit of that is that maybe we can get into some of the benefits now, Scott, is that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're like unknowingly diving into some of these benefits here. You've already covered several of them here. So I mean, what are the benefits? Like you mentioned, because they're just, you know, one function or one thing happening on each of these server functions, you're not worrying about scaling up the entire server component of your application. Like with my server right now, it's hosted on Meteor Galaxy, which is just like a Heroku-esque type of thing where you have containers, right? But if I need to scale up my entire server side, whether it's the webhooks, the API, or whatever, I'm scaling up the whole thing. I'm scaling up the entire server, where with serverless, you can really benefit from modifying essentially the app parts of your application that are maybe the most hungry for that and not have to pay for that extra strength or extra energy that you need from all of your application if parts of it are a little bit lazier than other parts. Basically, it can be cheaper because you're not necessarily worrying about scaling up the whole thing. You're worried about scaling up individual functions.
You know, when it initially clicked for me what serverless was, is I was listening to the CodePen radio podcast and they had, I think it was Chris Coyer and some of the devs behind CodePen explaining how they use serverless functions or cloud functions or lambdas. They all have different names to do all of their pre-processing. So you think like you've got SAS, you've got Less, you've got Babel, you've got like all of these different things on CodePen that need to be converted into JavaScript, HTML, or CSS. and they don't run like a SaaS server and a whatever server or whatever, because maybe for whatever reason, like auto prefixer would just spike. And so what they do is that they just have lambdas for all of these different kind of processors. And then they hit those lambdas with the code that needs to be converted. And then that lambda wakes up and does its work and then sends the result back and then shuts itself down. And the beauty of that is that that's very cheap to do versus just keeping a server hot and running. And because you're only taking a split second, and then that after that shuts down, maybe somebody from Airbnb will use that the next piece of that server. And then you're basically just sharing server compute power with the people around the world because you only need to dip in for a quick second to do that. So I thought that was an awesome, that's, I get it. Like that's, I see why that would be helpful.
Yeah. I think part of it that opened it up for me too was thinking about like some of the security benefits of it, right? If you manage a virtual private server and that server, it has basically the keys to your entire application. If that thing gets hacked for any specific way, whatever that account goes bye-bye, you could be in big trouble. Or that server is having an issue, your application could be in big trouble. Where if you think about a one specific serverless function going down or getting hacked isn't necessarily going to have the same exact, it's like containerizing things, not to use the word container like a Docker container or something, but it's keeping it sort of separate. This is separate, this is separate, this is separate. Maybe this function is running on a different service than this function for whatever reason or whatever. You don't have to worry about keeping a server potentially up and running that you're not maintaining the security aspects of. I know a lot of us, we've gotten into things like doing DigitalOcean droplets and we're not system admins, right? I myself, you know, there's probably a DigitalOcean droplet that I have that's maybe not up and running on the latest and everything and all the security patches and whatever. But this now we don't have to, you wouldn't have to worry about those kind of aspects from this because you're not managing the server in that sort of way.
One other benefit I have here is faster deploys. So just trying it out myself, the really cool thing is that if you only change one of your functions, you only redeploy that one function. You don't need to redeploy your entire application and do the whole build process and things like that. So sometimes that'll cut down your whole deploy process from like I was doing it on, we'll talk about providers, but I was doing it on one of them. And by the time I get pushed and went over to the dashboard and refreshed, it was like 12 seconds I was counting and the updated app was running.
Yeah, that's so a big
pretty
thing.
Impressed by that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little time that you just spent sitting and waiting for stuff like that. Or that's expensive. It's expensive for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, like deploying my entire Node app is like less than 45 seconds. Like it's quick for me, but a lot of people have like even like the Syntax website, which is not on a serverless, it's just a Next.js, but the whole deployment is like, I don't know, 6 minutes or so. I was talking to Guillermo from Zeit, and he's like, literally everything about V2 of their platform is way better, including speed. So redeploying that to V2, which is what we're trying to get on, would be so much faster than a current like 9 minutes that it takes to deploy, totally. Which like, you talk about 9 minutes is pretty good if you talk to some people who have like app release days, you know, and there's like 100 different steps.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it can be expensive. And so another thing is also it empowers front-end developers to do a lot more. You don't have to worry so much about being a system admin to, you know, do those kinds of things. And I guess that is a big skill in general, is that running a server is hard. Running your own server is hard. And that's why we do have services like Heroku and other things like Meteor Galaxy that do a lot of that stuff for you, right? But this gives you even one step further, is that the front-end devs, as long as you can write some Node code, you can write a function that does some stuff on the server, and now you don't have to worry about having that specific subset of knowledge of managing a server and getting all those routes incorrectly. You're just worrying about an endpoint, really.
Mm-hmm. I thought that I just did like a tweet about this the other day, and I said like, just tweet me back with your words of wisdom, because like I think one of the biggest resources I have in the world is Twitter followers who are much smarter than I.
Yeah.
So I thought that this reply from Max Steenbergen was awesome. He says, I don't care much about what tools people use other than professional interests, But to me, serverless and the Jamstack in general has been a gateway into actually building apps myself. Backend always has been too much of a hurdle for me, and now that hurdle is lower. It isn't just lower, it's gone. I thought that was really interesting. So this fits in well to the Jamstack, because if you do need a little bit of like server-side functionality with your React app or your Vue app or something like that, you don't have to, figure out an entire server. You literally can just write one quick function that will take in data and then return to you the result of that, or take in data, do something like send an email or something like that, right? Like there's, mm-hmm. you literally can just code these really super small functions that do one thing, and then you've got that. And then you don't have to, like, maybe you could literally change languages for the next piece of functionality of your website, and that wouldn't matter for that piece of code that you wrote last week.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, I've been like following it and playing with it for a couple of years now. I haven't built any like serious big application on it, but one of our predictions for this year was that serverless is going to get easier. And by just like kind of looking in and trying a bunch of this, I definitely think that is true.
Yeah, I think it's already true. There's, I did a Scott Tries video on YouTube called Scott Tries Begin, which is a service that we're going to talk a little bit about later in this episode.
Yeah.
Not as like a sponsor or something, but as a just a, one of these serverless things. And I think that's like between that and the current iteration of Next.js API routes, I think this stuff is getting way, way, way easier already. We're in February, so, you know, I think we're it's a good start for one of our predictions,
yeah,
right there.
I think that video is what got me onto it, because we were talking about Begin and Zeitz now on the podcast. And then you're like, I never tried Begin. And then you did a video about it. And then I was like, oh, this is cool. I watched it. And then I tried it myself. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And hopefully a bunch of people that listen to podcasts now will try it if you haven't already.
Yeah,
go check it out. Good job, Scott.
Hey, I'm doing more YouTube content lately, so it's part of my new YouTube thing. But yeah,
let's talk about what can you host on serverless. So you can host like a static file, so you can host your React application on serverless. We'll talk about some limitations in just a second. You can host obviously single functions. They can be in almost every language. The most popular by far is running them in JavaScript, but you can use Python, Go. I think there's even PHP. Like, doesn't Taylor Otwell have some sort of PHP serverless function?
I don't know. You know, the I haven't really spent a whole lot of time thinking about PHP. I don't know why.
I do every day.
Yeah.
Yes, you can run PHP on Lambda. We'll talk about the services in just a second as well. So yeah, you can do it. You can run it in
Rust?
Dino. Did Rust? We figure out how to say that yet?
Dino. Rust? Dino.
Did we decide on what the thing is, or are we forever gonna know?
There were people arguing about it on Twitter. So yeah, I don't know.
You didn't know? Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I can make that joke a fourth time. That would be good.
What isn't serverless for? You can't really host an entire app in one serverless function. So you can sneak an entire Express app into a serverless function if you wanted to, and that's referred to as overloading the function. And the downside to putting an entire app inside of a function is that you get slower cold starts, meaning mm-hmm. that if you were to start an app like node server.js, and that's your entire app, like mine starts in, I don't know, 200, 300 milliseconds, and that's slow for an API request. Imagine adding 300 milliseconds to a request just to start the server, not to connect to a database and do the actual work and send the response. So the whole idea behind serverless is that you don't put it all into one function. You break it up into multiple functions. And then there's a 500 meg limit on most applications, which is funny because now we have to start worrying about how big our server-side dependencies are. And you can hit that pretty quickly with your node modules folder, because most of them will include everything in the node modules folder, including the README and whatnot.
So I'm curious on your understanding of this, because the suggested way of having like a GraphQL API with like specifically Next.js server side routes, right? And now they're serverless routes, is to basically put your endpoint as one API route. That's pretty hefty amount for, you know, your entire API would be basically a large part of your application running. Do you have any thoughts on that specifically?
Yeah, I think as long as it's under 500 megs, which is a lot. Like, yeah. I was just, the Syntax website is all dependencies included. The Syntax website, I think, is just over 200 megs. Mm-hmm. And then you can also do things like tree shake your application to remove unused functions and whatnot. It doesn't seem to be included in some of these bundlers, but a few people have said they've done that. And it seems to be, yeah, that's a totally fine option. Because also, like, is it that big of a deal that one request every, I think it's 15 minutes or half an hour that your Lambda will run, and then at a certain point, it has to shut itself down, and you have to start up another one, and that's the cold start. So, like, is it that big of a deal that one request every 30 minutes has an extra 200 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds added to it? Maybe, but probably not for the things I'm working on.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'm just, we never got our, like, we did our whole conversion to Next.js and the server routes, and we had that all going, but it never went to production. So I didn't get to see it in a real world situation besides just using it myself. And as an individual using it, it was fine, but I just don't know how other people feel about that. So
I should also mention that the reason why people love these is, yes, because you can scale them, but also because it's dirt cheap. Like, yes, you could run a simple cheap little website for pennies every single month. Scott and I are going to do like a show on how does server pricing work? Like, what's a dyno? Why do you pay hours?
What's a dyno? A dyno?
You know, like Heroku has.
Yeah.
Whenever you're like trying to estimate costs, it's asking you like hours and things like that. You're like, all of them, 24, right? So we'll do a separate show on that, because here we go, Scott, I'm going to set you up. This is a big show.
Yeah, it's such a big show. We should break it into smaller functions of shows. See, I had that joke so ready, and then you ruined it. I trusted you, Wes. I trusted you. I trusted you with that joke.
Yeah. I see a good joke, I'll take it.
I trusted you with that joke. One time, this is a funny story. One time we were working on a project, and the project did not complete on time. And the project manager says to one of our developers, "I trusted you." And so that was always a huge joke. We always
cry. I trusted you.
Yeah. So whenever anything happens between Courtney and I, we always say, "I trusted you."
That is great.
Oh, dev stories. If you want to have dev stories of your own and host them on a website somewhere called devstories.tech, you're going to check out .tech domains.
So .tech, I know a lot of you went out and bought your .tech domains after they sponsored the first episode. .tech is the domain name for techies, developers, tech enthusiasts, tech whatever heads. It is that you are. Tech heads. I think that's what it should be. I obviously went ahead and used a .tech for my uses.tech website. We did a whole podcast on that. It's short, it's relevant, it perfectly encapsulates what you want to do. Big brands like CES, Viacom, and Intel have all used .tech. We've got a wicked deal for you if you want to go ahead and grab your own .tech domain name. There is 90% off a 1, a 5, and a 10-year .tech domain. Go to go.tech/syntax2020 and use the coupon code syntax2020, and you are going to get 90% off 1, 5, and 10-year domain names. Thanks so much to .tech for sponsoring.
Thank you. So let's get into these raw providers. Now, these raw providers are basically anywhere that you can write your own Lambda functions. And these aren't necessarily the hand-holdy services. These are sort of the real deal holy field services. These are the ones that really get into maybe a little bit more tech-heady territory in terms of the type of skill level needed to interact with these, I think.
Yeah, they're too hard for most people.
Yeah, especially the people who don't have experiences with these services or server-side experience to a large degree, yeah.
Yeah, like that's part of the benefit of having a sysadmin is that they're able to understand what Amazon. So the big one, we should say, the big one is Amazon Lambda. And they've got tons and tons of servers. And if you want to just have a little sip of computing power from Amazon, you can queue up a Lambda, or not even queue it up. You just write a Lambda and they'll give you a URL. You can ping that URL and do your work in whatever language you want. Likely Node.js is for those of you listening to this podcast, and it'll spit it back. So there's that one. There's what are the other ones? Google Cloud, Azure, Microsoft Azure has them.
Yeah.
Red Hat, IBM Cloud Functions, SAP apparently has an offering. Like this is, you can tell this is real deal when the corporate boys come yeah. into the room and start doing that. Cloudflare Workers. You heard of this before, Scott?
You see this? I have not. I think you told me about Cloudflare Workers in the past.
Somebody, I was like, hey, where should I host my upcoming Advanced React course? That's just a regular Node app, and I need to host it somewhere that will run a regular Node app. And I'll probably run into the limitations that we talked about earlier, so I can't put it on serverless. And they're like, put it on Cloudflare Workers. And I was like, isn't that like serverless? And their reply was, yeah, but I forget what the reply was. But anyways, it's not, it was something like, you probably can. It's probably some of like the overloading thing, but I did a little more digging into what Cloudflare Workers are, and they're kind of like service workers. So the idea is that you can write JavaScript that will intercept an HTTP request, kind of like what's the appropriate way to say man in the middle?
Intercept?
Monster in the middle. No, it's been changed. It's a monster in the middle attack. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously not a monster in the middle attack because you're doing it yourself. But because Cloudflare is at the DNS level, you can intercept HTTP requests, much like a service worker in JavaScript, and then do things like serve up a cache or do some transpilization, whatever that word is.
Transpilation.
You can do transpilation.
Yeah.
And I think it has all of the same features you'd expect from service worker, but you also can do it at a DNS level. And I think that's really cool because like right now I have an issue with my short domain name, west.io. Cloud app like upgraded me and some of the features that I relied on don't work anymore. Mm. And like I was like, oh, but like if I could like write some code that's in between my domain name and their servers that my domain name is pointing to. And I think that's what this is for, where you could just like jump in the middle and write a little bit of JavaScript.
Hey.
And then either send the request forward or send the request back yourself.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, it definitely. I'm not sure if I totally understand that right, but from my research, that's what it is.
It's a whole new world. I do not know any of this stuff. Yeah, this is very exciting to me. And there's also, okay, so we have these harder, more difficult providers that, you know, they're very, this is going to be your cheapest option. If you're looking at like, let me save the most amount of money possible, this is going to definitely be the cheapest option because again, you're going right to the source. And a lot of these other services that we're going to talk about use these services under the hood, many of which probably use AWS Lambda primarily. So these are the easier providers and there's a lot of different easier providers. I think maybe the first people that I saw do really easy serverless functions was probably Netlify. I think there were others that came before that were doing like the whole serverless thing. Mm-hmm. But in terms of who can make it the easiest, I think Netlify came in and was like, you know what? We know you want to do server-side stuff on our platform. So here, we're going to make it pretty easy to set up some functions for you.
Yeah. So the way that it works with a lot of these, we've looped these into providers and frameworks together because some of them are so tightly bound that the provider is the framework and some of them are somewhat different. So like Netlify is awesome because you just create a folder, and this is the way it works with almost all of these. You create a folder for your function, and then usually you stick like an index.js in there and you define whether that's going to be a get or a post or what are all the other different HTTP verb requests. And then each of those functions will generally have its own package.json. And then you have to have, this is like one kind of like a bit of a bummer thing to me, is that you have to have your own dependencies for each function.
Yeah.
You can share code. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But like let's say you wanted like Lodash for like three of your different functions. You have to install Lodash three different times for each of those. Unless you wanted to share I'll talk about it now. You can share code between lambdas. It's just that code is then bundled every single time for each of them. Mm-hmm. So the one I tried out was Begin.
Yeah.
Because Scott did the video on it, and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty sweet. I had met them at a conference, but just never had checked it out.
Yeah, because you told me about Begin, because I heard about it from you, and then I added to my list, and it just so happened that I was doing this Scott Tries video where I try different web services, right? And it just so happened to be number two on my list for no reason in particular. It wasn't because I was the most excited to try it. I just hadn't, I didn't know anything about it. And I'm really glad it was number two on my list, because now I'm like really into it. I'm very interested in Begin. It's begin.com, by the way. Yeah.
The whole idea behind Begin is that they have this like open source framework called Architect. And so you do have to code your serverless functions in a format that Architect understands. Mm-hmm. So the way it is, like, you have a folder called HTTP, and then you have get-index, and that's for your get requests to the index. And get-scott would be any requests that go to /scott on the domain name. And post-wes, and then you can have like variables like blog post /002. Like, that's one thing I was doing with the syntax API, is that I wanted to be able to do /API, /shows, /004. And that would give you show number four, which is kind of cool. So Begin is the paid hosting provider, and Architect is the open source framework behind Begin. And I don't think you have to know that it's Architect, because you can just use all the Begin docs and whatnot. But the thing about that is, if you ever wanted to go and host it yourself and not pay Begin, but you wanted to do the fear of the waters of AWS yourself, then you could do that.
Yeah, which is, you know, I really love what AWS does for us, but I've never really loved working in it. There's so many different options and different things you have to hit. There's so many different wells of knowledge, and I found the documentation's kind of all over the place. So if I can use one of these things instead, I'm going to always pick it, really.
I see like Google Cloud and Azure and AWS Lambda. I see these guys as just a utility. Mm-hmm. It's power coming in from the wall. And if you know how that works, you can certainly wire up your own lamp. But most of us are, or you can wire up your own circuits. Most of us are going to go and buy something that you can just plug into the wall and not have to worry about that. We want a one layer abstraction away from the stuff, and we're willing to pay for an abstraction layer on top of these things. So
I like that metaphor. I like that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I that just came to me. It's a good one. Just had a moment of clarity. The other big one in the space is Zeit's Now and Next.js. So if you are making a Next.js application, they have this thing called API routes, which is awesome. And you can very much the same. You can code up your serverless functions in there. And when you deploy it to Zeit's Now, they will do the behind the scenes deploying too. I think they use Lambda and Google Cloud. I'm not sure, but that's the thing, it doesn't matter, because it works awesome.
I think the whole point for us is that it doesn't matter, you know, if we're getting into these. Well, I guess that does matter, but it doesn't. It shouldn't have to matter to us, because we're not here to know what the infrastructure behind this is. We're just thinking about, here's this function, here's this thing, what it's going to do for us. And that's part of the whole productivity benefit of these things, is that you don't have to worry about setting up your Lambda routes and all those things.
There's a serverless framework, serverless.com. They sort of got the name there.
Yeah. Right.
And that will deploy to AWS.
They were one of the first Azure ones to make it easy. Yeah. I remember reading about
Lambda,
that.
Azure Functions, Google Cloud, and more. So that's a huge benefit to building on the serverless framework, is that you can literally move your stuff anywhere, and it's an open source framework. So you can just move this thing to any other provider if you want.
Yeah. There's also AWS Amplify, which I haven't used myself, but I've been hearing the word Amplify being thrown around a lot more as something that is really interesting to check out. I haven't checked it out. I just went to their docs, look nice. AWS Amplify.github.io looks pretty cool. Might be something I'll give a try. It doesn't look too difficult. Doesn't look too config heavy.
Yeah, I think it's so funny that even Amazon can't use Amazon, so they have to build their own tool. But that's obviously a joke, because it does serverless functions. But like a lot of these things, Begin does this as well. They also have things for databases and subscriptions and static files. We'll talk about those in just a second. So they're more, it's more of like a toolkit for the different pieces of things. Like obviously the server is just one part of building an app. You also need database and static files and VR. It looks like Amplify does, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, interesting.
VR. Predictions, machine learning capabilities to your app.
See, yeah, let's just throw some more words in here. What else can it, well, is it?
Pub sub. AR and VR. Storage, VR, interactions.
Interactions. UX, UI. Deep dive.
Deep learning. Pretty cool. So, man, I just wish, it's literally my job to try stuff all day. And I wish it could be my job to try stuff all day.
I know. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Like, this is our job to try these things and to dip our toes. And just in this one small facet of web development, which is serverless functions, there's literally like, 20 different possible options that we could go into?
Yeah, I know. And that's this whole Scott Tries thing, man. I'm just going to try stuff. And the best part of it, I don't want to keep plugging this video series that I'm doing, but the whole point of it is for me to go in with as like little preconceived notions as possible so that I look like a complete ass on camera trying to figure out what the heck this thing does. And so I'm pretty excited to try out a lot of these. I'm just going to go ahead and copy and paste this providers list into my to-do list for that series because I just want to try all this stuff. And it'll give me a good excuse to really do some deep dives here.
Scott's mailbox is going to be full of stickers and t-shirts in the next couple of months.
Yeah, so let's hope so. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. What else do we have here?
We have a lot here. We should do a two-parter.
Okay, yeah, we can. Oh my gosh, there's tons.
Yeah, we're definitely going to split these up into smaller functions here. So we're going to do a potluck next week, and then we'll be back with part two of our serverless function. So we want to give you the freshest data possible, and that's why we're going to take an ad break to talk about FreshBooks, which is one of our longtime sponsors over here. They're all longtime sponsors. They're all our favorites. FreshBooks is the cloud accounting software of your dreams. I think I use of your dreams for way too many of our sponsors, but FreshBooks is so good. FreshBooks is really, let's talk about this because nobody likes to talk about money. We're developers and we like to talk about code, but we all know that billing stuff has to happen. You have to get paid for your work. You have to be able to send invoices. You have to be able to check in on those invoices. And QuickBooks is no good. I'm just going to straight up say it. I don't mean to make this a flame advertisement, but I love FreshBooks simplicity. It really, it's software that was just absolutely ripe for the disruption of it. So FreshBooks does a great job at getting you all of those cloud accounting features that you know and love while making it just a fantastic web service from up north in Toronto. They're Toronto based.
Yes, they are.
So check it out at FreshBooks.com. And you're going to want to see all of the easy invoicing, expensing, time tracking, projects, payments, reporting, and all sorts of more. They even have excellent mobile experiences for you to be able to check all that stuff on the go. Because that's important. We're always on the go. That's what we're doing. So
you know what it's the best for is scanning receipts before I crumple them and lose them in the wash.
It's a necessity. It's a necessity to be able to do that because who keeps track of their receipts? I don't want to have a folder full of receipts. Nobody wants to do that. So you're going to check it out at FreshBooks.com/syntax and enter syntax in the how did you hear about a selection. Let them know that you came from Syntax so that they say, hey, that's our favorite podcast around. Those syntax guys over there at syntax.fm. So check it out, FreshBooks.com/syntax.
Beautiful. What other providers do we have here? We talked about Netlify
almost all earlier. It's crazy.
One really cool one is Apex Up. Have you heard of this? You seen this, Scott?
That's the name of the show. We should just have a third show a week just called Have You Seen This? Where we just
Share
services because there's new web services 24/7. I haven't. No. This is from the robot himself.
This is from, TJ Holowaczuk, who is the inventor of everything.
He's just a machine.
He invented Stylus Express.
Mm-hmm.
Connect. What else?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, the Express Connect stuff was early on was him. pretty much every like foundational Node package. He was extremely important in early days of Node. And then he switched to being a Go developer a couple of years ago. And I was very sad. But now I'm looking at this apex.sh, which is called Up. They have a couple products, but one is called Up. And apparently the way that it works is that you just take your Express, Koa, Django, Golang existing framework and run it through apex.sh, and it will magically make it serverless and post it. It doesn't say anywhere on how it does it, but the sort of the idea is that people don't want to have to learn this new way. Like that's one of my biggest hangups with the serverless stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It is frustrating. I like my existing Express workflow. It is very simple. I can share code really easily. And I just want some tool that will serverless it for me. And apparently that's what this will do. So I have yet to, it's open source.
Yeah. And I have that same feeling, because you do, anytime anybody new comes out with, you know, here's our new serverless platform, I instantly think of, okay, now I got to learn somebody else's folder structure or management style or way to do it. And yeah. I don't want to have to think too much about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Me neither. So I'm going to take one of my existing Express apps and try run this through Up. I think it's going to be amazing because everything TJ does is amazing. So it's like Zeit as well. Anything they do is probably going to be amazing. So I'm excited for it. It's got kind of the same like minimalistic vibe as Zeit as well. So it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, same vibe. You can tell a lot about a project from their vibe.
Good vibe.
Yeah, we should have a vibe level on our projects. I give this one five
on this.
Yeah, 5 vibes out of 10 here. I'm not feeling this. Just kind of just makes me feel a little bit sad.
So one other one that somebody just tweeted at me was OpenFaaS, Open Functions as a Service, which is a Kubernetes.
You got that. You got it.
I know how to say that. I'm just trying to trying to figure out how to explain what Kubernetes is. There's like actually this really cool, it's like container.
Yeah.
Kind of like Docker, but it'll orchestrate your containers.
Nobody knows what it does. It just, yeah. Yeah.
It scales your containers up very high. And apparently this thing will, because the difference between just taking your functions and throwing them on a digital ocean is that you have to manage scaling them up and down yourself. So this Open Functions as a Service apparently will just work with you can just deploy this thing to, I don't know.
It seems like a good option for those of us who need full ownership and control. I think that's a thing that we haven't really talked too much about. But again, I think this gives you a little bit more full control over that.
Yeah, like imagine you're working for a company where you have to have everything on site. Like GitHub has on site offerings because lots of companies can't let a single piece of data get outside of their own managed infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. And they probably listen to this podcast and say, must be nice to just be able to whip up any single service you want, Wes and Scott. It took me 6 years to get approval to log into Twitter on my computer at work, right?
When I worked at the University of Michigan, we couldn't even run Drupal 7 because they wouldn't let us have a certain version of PHP. There was like the PHP had to be this antiquated old version. We couldn't run Drupal 7, whatever it was. And I just remember being like, gosh, I just want to run something that's, you know, or it's Drupal 8. I'm sorry, not Drupal 7. I just remember being so frustrated by those limitations that were placed. And it's like, people work within those limitations every single day of the week. And it must be so magical to not have to deal with those limitations. I very much feel for those of you who have legal and corporate limitations like that.
Yeah, I'm just reading the OpenFaaS here. It says, avoid lock-in through the use of Docker, runs on any public or private cloud. So the Docker image runs on one single node. And then you can scale up. I'm assuming that's what Kubernetes does, is that it will orchestrate the scaling up and down of your servers as you need it. So I'm not sure how that works if you need a Docker image for every function.
I don't know enough about this stuff to.
I'm sure they figured it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of a neat one to look into if you need some sort of self-hosted one as well. If you need to go all the way down to, because that's, we'll talk about lock-in in the next episode, but at a certain point you are locking yourself into maybe one of these providers. Not all of them do, but some of them do lock you in.
Yeah. Interesting. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that a little bit more in the next, this sort of lock in, a whole bunch of maybe pitfalls. We're going to be talking about moving existing applications over, local development, sharing dependencies, all the stuff we didn't get to cover in not the next episode of Syntax, but the one after that. So we had to split this one up. I mean, it was appropriate for the joke that I wanted to make that Wes stole, but it was also appropriate just because of the amount of content here. There's so much here. It would have overloaded our server. So now's the time we get into some sick picks. It's the type of the part of the show where we talk about stuff that we really like, stuff that we've been into. So my sick pick is a really interesting YouTube channel here. And I'm going to say first and foremost that I have not listened to everything on this YouTube channel, as in like this YouTube channel has a bunch of different series. I've been watching this one series in particular, so I can only vouch for this one. And also there, you have to have a little bit of tolerance for annoying YouTube posts. Not to say that this guy's going to be annoying to you, but he borders on the annoying. And this is Matt McMuscles. Is that really? That's got to be a fake name. Yeah, I got God. This is a YouTube channel and it's largely video game based, but that's not why I think this is interesting. I think the most interesting part of this YouTube channel is this series called What Happened. And he basically goes through these, you could consider them, you know, cursed games or just total flops or some of the biggest video game disasters in history. And he talks about the entire development cycle of them. So that's where this is relevant, because I don't know very much about game development, but I have worked on a lot of teams on a lot of projects that have built a lot of software. And this is just so appropriate for all of this stuff, because what you really learn is what not to do when running any sort of major project. Because just like any other software that you're writing, whether it's an app or a video game, these stories are absolutely fascinating, from what you have is like parent companies getting in the way to, you know, broken software, to bad managers, to all sorts of things. And what you realize is that here you have these, you know, this output, this thing, this video game that's been bad forever and everybody can laugh and make fun of it. But that video game wasn't bad because there was, you know, 20 developers who all sucked at their jobs. This was bad because of potentially a host of reasons. Maybe the target moved way too many times, or there was too many limitations placed on them, or too many people pulled off of the project. But at the end of the day, I have been going through these and I've just been so fascinated by the stories about what exactly led these projects to be so exactly terrible. And as a developer, just very, very interesting.
That's really neat. I love those types of channels that look into like why things went a certain way. Like there's another, maybe it's even the same one, Matt McMuscles. I don't think so. There's another one, a guy who goes into like video game consoles and like why they failed and why only things were available in some regions, mm-hmm. and why. And he went through every single, I went through every one of them. I forget what the name is, I'll find it. But like how each of the consoles got hacked.
Oh.
So how like Xbox 360 got hacked and how the original PlayStation got hacked and how the next PlayStation and how the DRM worked. And that was, I'm going to find that. Maybe that'll be my sick pick.
Yeah. I was just watching one last night and it was just like, all right, these developers were like really talented. And then this one developer who spoke out against the manager for like the manager kept changing what they were doing, and the game was already delayed 100 times. And this one, the one guy who was basically keeping things together and being like, no, we're not going to change this again. He just left. He just quit. He was just like, screw it. I quit. I can't do this. And that's really what you notice throughout the course of this lifespan of this development of this thing, is all of the good people left because they were just pulled off of it by the personalities involved. It was just very fascinating.
All right, my sick pick is Modern Vintage Gamer on YouTube.
Interesting.
I had another YouTube channel I was going to sick pick, but I'll save that one. So this one is great because it goes into how the piracy anti-piracy worked and how they were defeated and like how the game shark worked. Like I like that was magic to me when I was a kid.
Same here.
And there's all these like weird like consoles that were only released in Japan. And I just love it. I played games as a kid, but I don't have that much interest in video games. But just how it worked is very interesting to me. So check it out. Modern Vintage Gamer on YouTube.
I'm going to check this out. It's right in my alley.
All right. Shameless plugs. I'm going to shamelessly plug my beginner JavaScript course. I'm not going to spell it. You know how to spell beginner. Beginnerjavascript.com. Use syntax for $10 off. It is the course to get you up and running on modern JavaScript and just get you comfortable with it. So you can go ahead and...
It's the course of your dreams.
Yes, it is. It's the course. There you hear it. I'm going to put Scott's face on the website. This is the course of your dreams.
You have to see the magic of this course. my slogans here. Cool. I'm going to plug my YouTube channel because I've been doing some YouTube videos just for fun. I decided that, you know, before in the past, I've always done YouTube videos where there's just like straight up tutorial content.
Yeah.
I'm taking a different approach to it right now. I'm doing these Scott Tries videos where I try different web services that we've talked about a couple times, but I'm also doing another series of videos on a code block where I'm getting into real code in the Level Up application. So the first one I released was a little bit on React Motion and just talking about React Spring. And so what I did is I took one component that was written in React Spring and I just converted it to React Motion and talked about it while I did it. And another one that I'm that will be out by the time you're watching or listening to this podcast was really cool. I had this severe jank in my site where it was loading the stuff and the animations were really choppy. At one point, I was getting down to like 10 FPS. It was not anywhere near 60 FPS. And I'm thinking, what in the world is going on? And that's when I found out the real cost of data URIs. So I don't know if you know too much about data URIs, but apparently they're 6 times slower to load than images. And when you were loading about 100 of them, your site is not happy about that. So
really?
Yeah, that's a...
I always wondered about that. Like, at what point does it not make sense to use a data URI because of the text that it spends over the wire?
Yeah, at some point...
You found it.
I found it. I definitely found it. But then I then built this whole new service around how I'm going to do background images differently instead of using data URIs. But it is. Yeah, you have a 64-bit string or whatever, and the CPU has to decode that. So when you have a whole bunch of them, the CPU's got to decode all of them and your CPU goes nuts. So this was a limitation in the site and I fixed it. So if you want to check that out, learn a little bit about stuff like that, check out the Level Up Tutorials YouTube channel. I'll have the link in the show notes.
Beauty. Well, thanks for tuning in. If you have your own thoughts on serverless, make sure you tweet us at SyntaxFM or hit us up in the Reddit, reddit.com/r/SyntaxFM. We've got like almost 700 people in there. It's a real cool community too.
Cool community.
Cool. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you on Monday.
Later.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.